Broadcasting live from the Buckhead Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Legal Experts.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to the Atlanta Legal Experts radio show. I'm Emily Rowell, your host with attorneyofficespace.com, and we have Rich Casanova today, as always.
Here, I feel like studio. I'm in class when you call out my name, whatever. It's kind of a special episode this morning with John Marshall.
Yes.
Right? So I'm back in, well, I was never in law school, but anyway.
Yes, we're looking forward to it. And today our guests are Lisa Kaplan, director of the LLM program at the JMLS. Good morning.
Good morning, Emily.
Thank you so much for being here. Jeffrey Vandetta, Associate Dean for Scholarship and the John E. Ryan Professor of International Business and Workplace Law.
Good morning, Emily, and good morning, Rich.
Good morning.
Good morning. Anna Sokol with Joseph H. Rosen Immigration Law Group.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here.
And welcome back to Buckhead Radio X. Yeah.
Thank you for having me back.
Yep.
And last but not least, we have Tiffany Simmons, Esquire, with the Simmons Law Practice.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me.
And you found us. You got in, what, late last night or something, you said?
I did at 12 a.m. My flight was delayed.
Dedicated person.
Thank you. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
And stay tuned because later in the show, we're actually going to share with you some important tips if you are facing a DUI. So Tiffany's going to help us with that, and we look forward to that. But to start, I wanted to go ahead and do Lisa's bio. Thank you again for being here. She is a graduate, got her JD with Duke University in 1987, practiced employment law and litigation for two large Atlanta firms before moving into education. Previously worked as a writer and editor of legal materials before joining John Marshall Law School in 2010 as the school's first LLM program director. As director, she has overseen the LLM program through ABA approval and launched three LLM programs. One would be the online employment law, two residential LLM in American Legal Studio, and studies, and three online LLM in American Legal Studies. So thank you so much for being here. And I'm going to go ahead and read Jeffrey Vandetta's bio as well, because they're going to answer the questions together today. So Jeffrey Vandetta holds the John E. Ryan Chair in International Business and Workplace Law, and serves as Associate Dean for Scholarship at Atlanta's John Marshall Law School. Professor Vandetta joined the law school faculty in 1999 after practicing in the Labor and Employment Law Group in the Atlanta office of Kilpatrick Stockton, now known as Kilpatrick Townsend and Stockton, where he was a partner and represented Fortune 500 clients such as PepsiCo, Frito-Lay, Delta Airlines, Lockheed Martin, and Asahi National Broadcasting Network of Japan. Professor Vandetta teaches courses in contracts and other international and domestic business law areas, including labor and employment law. He teaches both the Juris Doctor and the LLM degree programs at Atlanta's John Marshall Law School. And last but not least, but not quite last yet, is Mrs. Sokol. She earned her law degree from the University of Lodz in Poland in 2004. In 2013, she earned Master of Laws LLM degree in American Legal Studies from Atlanta's John Marshall Law School. Ms. Sokol is anticipating taking the Georgia Bar Exam in 2015. She has previously worked in law offices and circuit court in Poland. Ms. Sokol currently works for Joseph H. Rosen Immigration Law Group with offices in Roswell, Georgia and Lodz, Poland. She joined the firm in 2006. She specializes in working with foreign athletes, entertainers, artists, foreign professionals, and U.S. businesses seeking to employ foreign professionals. Ms. Sokol is fluent in Polish, English, and Italian. And again, we're glad to have him here. That was a mouthful.
Yeah, that's three more languages than I can speak. Yeah.
Totally. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the LLM Master's Law Program. And who is it for?
Well, in general, an LLM or Master's of Law Program is for a student, a person who already has earned the first degree in law. So for Americans or people educated at U.S. law schools, that would be a Juris Doctor, a JD degree. Mm-hmm. And for those educated outside of the U.S., it would be a differently titled law degree, but basically the equivalent of a Juris Doctor. And whatever other criteria had to be met in their country to practice law. So, for example, in the United States, that's passing a bar exam. Mm-hmm. In other countries, sometimes it's some work experience in addition to some exams.
Okay. Okay. So students that have already gotten their degree but would like to continue their education.
Correct. For a couple of different reasons. One reason might be that you are an attorney who was educated outside of the United States, but you'd like to practice law in the United mm-hmm. States. And in every case, whichever jurisdiction you'd like to practice in, whichever state, is going to require that you meet certain criteria. Often, a foreign educated attorney can meet those criteria by coming to the United States and getting an additional year of education at an American law school.
Okay.
For a domestically educated attorney, you might want to further your specialty. Mm-hmm. And so that would be a different degree program. So it would be in a specialty, such as tax, or in the case of our law school, employment law.
Okay. Okay. Anna, can you talk a little bit about that? And you are looking to do that as well. So can you give me some examples?
Well, yes, in my specific situation, I think having worked in international and immigration field for several years, I got to the point where I just needed a better understanding of American legal system. Mm-hmm. So the LLM program not only gives me the ability to sit for the bar exam here in the U.S., it also provides me with ability to assist our international clients better. So mm-hmm. our office, the immigration law group I've been working for the last several years, recently has opened office in Poland. So for me, it's just a great ability to further my career and take it to the next level.
Great. Great. What type of coursework do LLM students do? Jeff, can you answer that?
Yes, I think it's somewhat program dependent. For students like Anna who are taking our American Legal Studies LLM program, if you're doing the ground-based version, you're taking courses in basic aspects of American law, somewhat similar to what a first-year law student in a JD program would take, and actually our students sit in with the JD students to give them a real law school experience. And the idea is to prepare the foreign-educated lawyer to not only take the bar exam in the United States, but also to practice law in the United States. So in addition to the kinds of things that you might normally take, courses in contracts or torts or criminal law, there are also skills courses that teach you how to function in an American courtroom or the American style of negotiations for contracts and things like that. Our employment law students and our online American Legal Studies students study a somewhat different curriculum. Let me take the online American Legal Studies students first. That program is not a bar exam qualifying program. That's not its intention, and that's not its purpose. Its purpose is to gather foreign educated lawyers who want to learn more about American law. And American law is a gold standard for either imitation or distinction, but it's still a gold standard that the world looks to. Mm-hmm. And the idea of this program is to bring together lawyers from different countries and let them talk about American law and how it relates to their own country's legal mm-hmm. development, particularly for lawyers from developing world countries. For the online employment law program, the coursework there is really specialized opportunities that they would not have had in law school to study aspects of employment or labor law or employee benefits law that will be of use to their clients and useful to them in growing their practices.
Nice. So the online, I'm sure, makes it easier. Lisa, can you tell me a little bit about the online degree program?
Yes. The online LLM in employment law was the first LLM program that we launched at John Marshall, launched in 2010. And okay. Thus far has had, oh goodness, 7 or 8 cohorts enter, maybe 9, and about 5 graduate. Because we have 2 entry points per year, we have more than 1 graduating cohort per year. The online program is 100% asynchronous. And what that means is there are no live requirements. So this program is very attractive to working attorneys. These are professionals who have very busy professional and personal lives, but they'd like to get that next level mm-hmm. of education. Mm-hmm. So this degree program allows them to get the complete LLM degree, which consists of 24 credit hours, over around 19 or 20 months.
Wow.
So they're
on their own time.
On their own time.
Mm-hmm.
They are only taking one course at a time. It's a very interesting structure that we thought a lot about. And what we do is we allow the students to take courses back to back rather than simultaneously. So during a given semester, semesters are typically 14 weeks, and mm-hmm. a student, this case an attorney, takes one course for 7 weeks and then another course for 7 weeks.
Okay.
So they're always only in one course at a time, allowing them to focus. And then, again, the other feature of it being asynchronous, they're allowed to do their work in any given week at the time most convenient for them.
Right.
So everything in the course, the syllabus, the required readings, the online discussions, it's all archived. It's there for them online whenever they can get to it.
So they just have a certain time frame, and so they can do it at will.
Yes. So within the 7 week course, mm-hmm. they do need to keep up on a weekly basis. But within that week, they can sort of do the work at the time best for them. It is a 24/7 password protected, website mm-hmm. or online campus with 24/7 tech support. And we have students from all over the globe in these programs. So that's another reason for it to be asynchronous, is because our student in, Malaysia needs to do their work at a different time from our
sure.
student in Houston.
Sure.
One other thing that's worth pointing out about the online program, particularly the employment law program, is that there is an opportunity at both the beginning and the end of the program for the folks who are enrolled in it to be together in Atlanta. It's not for required coursework. There is an orientation that Lisa conducts that's very important, and it's fabulous for the students. And they all get to meet each other so that when they are communicating online during the program, they have a face to match with the name and the personality. And a big part of the online employment law program are discussion forums in which we have professionals, these lawyers who come to us to get the degree, discussing their views and their reactions to problems or questions in the course. And one of the fun things is to really hear the multi-jurisdictional perspective. This week I have been going back and forth with a student from Massachusetts as we have discussed the differences in Massachusetts and Georgia employment law.
Right.
And in this same class we have, or in this same cohort, we have a student from Puerto Rico. So that brings a civil law, European-style law framework to the discussion as well. At the end of the program, our people who write in the who are in the employment law program write a thesis as one of the last things they do. And when they are done with this thesis, a master's thesis, a fairly substantial undertaking, and they have a faculty advisor. I've advised a few of these. It's a lot of work, but they do it well. They come to Atlanta, and then they present the thesis to all of their fellow students in the cohort and the professors in the program. And it's a great experience for them, and it's a celebration, really, of their very hard work.
Gotcha. That is so interesting. You must love what you do.
Absolutely. I've been at the bar for 27 years. I practiced law for 13 after being a federal court clerk. And I've been at John Marshall. This is starting my 16th year. So I have really loved law teaching, and it's really the greatest privilege I think any lawyer can have, can be to teach law.
And to have people from all over the world, literally, to talk to every day.
Absolutely. Yeah, people like Anna and other students that we have at John Marshall who come to us from a variety of national and legal cultures. It's really, let's put it this way, I feel like I learn as much mm-hmm. as I teach. And that's what makes it super rewarding.
Tell me, Lisa, about the new rule a little bit, and how does it impact the ability of foreign educated attorneys to take the bar exam in Georgia?
Great question, and a very, very timely subject for anyone who's a foreign educated attorney interested in practicing in Georgia. What we're referring to now are the rules that refer to the requirements to take the Georgia bar exam. And this
okay.
would be of interest to foreign educated attorneys who are not now allowed to practice in the U.S. but would be interested in practicing in Georgia. Our residential LLM program was originally developed with the requirements of the New York bar in mind. many states have various criteria for allowing foreign educated attorneys to sit for the bar, but New York has a very specific rule and a process in place. So we were able to develop our program with that rule and that process in place and make sure that our students, our foreign educated students, after going through our one-year residential LLM, would be eligible to sit for the New York bar. This okay. is, even though they may practice in Georgia with attorneys such as Anna, if their practice is a federal practice, which hers is, that's immigration law, then the New York bar would be sufficient.
Okay.
However, ideally, if you live and practice in Georgia, you'd like to be a member of the Georgia bar.
Sure.
This spring, the Board of Bar Examiners issued a brand new rule, which, like New York's, is very specific about the curricular criteria and the process for a foreign educated attorney to take the bar in Georgia. This is really huge for someone who has this interest. We now can say, yes, you have a previous degree that meets the criteria of the rule. Here is another degree, a one-year degree that meets the criteria of the rule. All other requirements being met, such as character and fitness requirements, you Sure. should be eligible to sit for the Georgia bar. This rule is so new that you will find that even the law schools in Georgia don't quite yet have their curriculum published to meet the requirements of the rule. We are working with the State Board of Bar Examiners to develop those curriculum so that we all do meet them. And the deans and directors of the LLM programs in Georgia have met with the director of the Board of Bar Examiners and are working throughout this summer to get that done. So, for example, for the John Marshall curriculum, if you went to our website now, you would see the curriculum that applied to students for the past 2 years. Soon, you will see a new curriculum that meets those those new requirements, and that's something that we are in the process of going through the formal process inside of a law school to get that curriculum restructured with, you know, working with our graduate education committee and our faculty. It is something that I can speak to with someone personally, though, and give them a pretty good idea of what their curriculum would look like in the 2014-15 school year. And I understand at the end of the program, we'll give out some contact information so we can do that.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Well, one point I want to make about the John Marshall program, our program was the first in Georgia. We were ahead of the curve. The other schools mostly had LLM programs, but they were thesis writing programs. And ours was a program designed around an ABA rule that the Georgia Supreme Court ultimately adapted for Georgia and adopted, but it was a proposed ABA rule that was the product of a number of years of work by various committees to create a uniform standard for an LLM degree designed to qualify people from foreign educations and law to practice mm-hmm. law in the U.S. So we were ahead of the curve. We've now had people do this. We started with the sort of the New York and ABA criteria. New York is influential because it is the state that has probably for the last 30 years been the most hospitable for foreign educated lawyers to become bar qualified. One other thing I would also add is that very recently the Texas Supreme Court issued a rule very much like Georgia's, following in our footsteps, and they had been looking at this for a number of years too, mm-hmm. to do the same thing with LLM degrees. And what this does for the state and the business in the state can't really be underestimated. Georgia and the State Bar of Georgia has been working very, very diligently and ahead of the curve for about, I would say, at least 10 years to make Georgia and Atlanta very attractive to foreign businesses, and that includes the business of law. And mm-hmm. if a foreign business is going to be here and is going to thrive, they want to have access to lawyers not only who are American, but they want to have access to lawyers from their own country and culture too. Well, Georgia opened its doors to international commercial arbitration with some laws that were recently passed, and this rule that opens up the Georgia bar for admission to foreign educated lawyers with the right kind of LLM degree is another step in that direction, and a fairly major one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would bring a lot more business to the state for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I've had some experience with foreign lawyers who have come to Atlanta, both when I worked at Kilpatrick, we had foreign lawyers in the law firm, and since. And the problem that they have had is that there has not been any clear way that they have to qualify to take the bar exam here. There was not one set of standards or one set of procedures to follow. And what the Georgia Supreme Court has done here and what our degree program does in meeting that requirement is to provide that kind of certainty for foreign educated lawyers.
It's great that y'all have been ahead of the curve since day one, it seems.
Well, absolutely. Under Lisa's leadership and the leadership of our recently retired dean, Richardson Lynn, we definitely stayed ahead of the curve.
Anna, is there anything you'd like to say about that new rule?
Well, definitely I would repeat what Professor Vendetta just said. The new rule really proves that, I'm sorry, that Georgia is becoming more and more attractive for like foreign investment. There are a lot of multinational companies that made it home here in Georgia. So for me, up until now, I was planning to take the New York bar exam. But since I have already committed 8 years of my professional career here in Georgia, I am really hoping that I will be able to sit for the Georgia bar. So
sure.
I think it's really great for the state, and it just proves that it's really growing. So,
thank you. And for the online LLM, LLM programs, do students have certain times that they must be online?
As we mentioned before, this is what's called an asynchronous program.
That's right.
So the short answer is no. They don't have to be on at a certain time each day, meaning they don't have to be in front of their computer at, say, 7 p.m. for a live lecture. They
right.
they do have to keep up on a weekly basis. But what we've found is that, even though this is a master's program, law is a little bit different than every other area in that we get our doctorate before we get our master's. Mm. So we have our master's students are folks who've already been through their undergraduate degree and then 3 years of law school. They're admitted to the bar or working attorneys. You want something done, ask a busy person. You would be shocked at the resumes of the people who are adding this into their day and their week.
Right.
So they handle very well the structure of being mm-hmm. able to do the work on their own time. And even when they add in the factor of the thesis paper, which Professor Vendetta mentioned, while they are researching and writing their thesis, this is the only time during the program where they are, in fact, doing two things at once in the program. They're taking a course and working on the thesis. The thesis isn't a dissertation level paper that is to be defended in front of a committee. It is a 25 to 30 page paper of legal academic research that is to be of publishable quality.
Hmm.
And also, as Professor Vendetta mentioned, he has been the individual advisor for several of the students. Each and every student has a group advisor, someone they can come to on matters of form and structure, and they each have an individual advisor who it's matched up with the student usually based on the topic that the student chooses to research. The thesis quality has been excellent. We have, in fact, had two who have been published. And
wow.
And I think 100% of the people who have pursued publication have been published.
Absolutely.
Many times they're like, no, I'm good, you know.
Right, right.
But we have another one going into that process now, and I anticipate that she will probably be published. We help them out with this by using the resources we have in the law school
mm-hmm.
For getting that paper out there to law journals that would be potential places to publish their papers. Professor yeah. Vendetta, I believe, would like to encourage even more of the students to pursue the publication.
Absolutely. I think this is one of the great practice development opportunities that is untapped and underdone out in the practicing bar. When I practiced law, I practiced at a law firm where a number of us thought that it was very helpful in terms of establishing your bona fides with clients and keeping yourself current on current issues, to be writing and speaking on these topics regularly to the state bar, to national bar associations, but also to do so in sometimes a more elaborated scholarly form, so that you actually establish your expertise at a real level of depth in a particular subject. Right. Let me give you an example of a thesis that's going on right now that I think is going to be exciting when it's done. We have a student who practices law in Atlanta, but has some transnational clientele, and she has decided to write her thesis on a comparative study of how family and medical leave works in a variety of countries, comparing our own approach to their approach, and trying to see what can be learned from each other, and what proposing, I suppose, what you might say is an optimal approach, taking all of these things into account. And I'm hopeful that when this student is done, the student's still very early in the thesis process, but when this student is done, they will have a piece that will be attractive to journals that publish in the area of labor and employment law, and this will establish not just her expertise in the United States laws, both state and federal, that deal with medical and family leave. It will also establish transnational perspective. And this is the great unsung and not fully understood thing among American law schools, is just how globalized our lawyers are going to have to be in the 21st century, even if you're a solo practitioner. I mean, there is no place you escape from this.
Right.
Linda Klein, who recently finished up a presidency of the American Bar Association, said in an interview a couple of years ago that and I'm paraphrasing here, that the lawyer of the future really needs to be transnational. That's where American lawyers need to be headed, because it's not just going to be domestic anymore. It's going to be very hard to have very many areas of practice, certainly in the civil practice side, that don't involve international issues. We have a young graduate who has been practicing custody and various kinds of child visitation issues, but it's been on a transnational level. She's developed a specialty in assisting folks who have come to the United States from another country, another culture, who have visitation issues or custody issues, and foreign adoption issues as well. She has been doing this on not just a local Georgia basis. She's been doing it on essentially a worldwide basis from her clients who are in Georgia or who come to Georgia.
Wow. It's like Attorneys Without Borders.
Right? Very good phrase. Very good phrase.
I had a question, Jeff. This is Rich Casanova. On the what point are they are with a thesis? Have they already established which countries they're examining, or is it too early on?
No. Well, this student has pretty well established the scope of what they're going to do. Although I have encouraged her to consider some other aspects. So it's very easy, I won't say very easy, it's the wrong word. It's very natural for a common law lawyer, we're in a common law system, the system that was inherited from England, to look to other common law countries that range from India to South Africa to Canada, of course, to the United Kingdom and Australia, New Zealand. It's very easy to look to that group of families.
Well, that was kind of my question, is how do they determine what other countries to look towards? And you're encouraging her to seek outside the common law, because then you have a true differential perspective, whatever, right?
Well, absolutely. Well, three-quarters of the world is in a jurisdiction that's a civil law tradition that comes out of the Roman law. Almost all of Central and South America, in their Spanish inheritance, they took the Spanish civil law. Even in the United States Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, Spanish civil law is very strong. And then you have the European civil law. Basically, in the EU, you have EU law that the student should be concerned with, as well as the internal law of each of the EU countries.
Right.
Well, of course, she's got to cut it down. I'm not trying to make her do 50 countries.
Right,
I suspect she'll pick about five or six, and pick them really for what they have to show, different approaches to the same problem. And not all of our students write on comparative topics. Some write on very localized topics, too, that are of great interest. But I'm starting to see more and more interest among our cohorts coming through in writing on transnational issues.
Interesting.
Another thing that Jeff mentioned, or Emily or Jeff, about Yeah, it was rich. Lawyers Without Borders.
There you go. Yes. Exactly.
It struck a chord with me because that sort of sounds like our students in our online programs, Lawyers Without Borders. Not only do they not have to be in front of a computer at any particular time, they certainly can have that computer anywhere. I have many examples of, you know, emails I receive from my students from, I'm in the backseat of the car on the way to a soccer tournament, you know, outside of Dallas, to I'm on a cruise ship with my family. I was happy to get away for an hour and get to my employment law forum. Or, you know, I'm traveling to Japan for 2 weeks. I'll be doing my work from there.
Yeah, right.
Just wanted to let you know that you're going to see some funny time stamps on my discussion. Don't think I was up in the middle of the night.
Right.
So the students can do the work from anywhere, and so can the professors. So this opens up for us, for our faculty. Not only do we have access to our full-time faculty in our online programs, but also distinguished attorneys from around the world. And we truly take advantage of that. Whenever a new course is going to be offered in the employment law program, if we don't have someone on the full-time faculty who is a very good fit for that course, I sort of shoot for the stars and think, who would I like to have?
And from anywhere.
From anywhere. And that's the person I start with. And we very, very often get them.
Wow.
So our employment law students and all of our online students have access to not only the full-time John Marshall faculty, but attorneys from around the globe. And these attorneys are very excited to do it because here's an opportunity for them to teach in the subject they love at the time convenient for them.
Want. Yep. That's right? Awesome. So it's basically saved on there. And then they can access it any time that they want.
The professors, what they do as far as teaching a new course is they actually develop the entire course in advance of the first class day. So that when a student goes online for an online employment law course, they actually 1 week before the first day of the course can go on and see the entire course. They can see what is required of them every single week, from here are required readings to here are optional and recommended readings. Here are the professor's notes, sort of the professor's thoughts, what I would consider sort of the introduction or the start of that lecture that you usually have in a law class. And then they have, hey, here's what we'd like you to do this week. Here are the objectives, two or three things to get out of this work. And here's like how I'd like you to show me that you've met those objectives, either discuss these topics or perhaps write a short paper. It's very, very often discussion-based. These are attorneys. They have real-world experience, and so it's a great way for them to bring in that real-world experience while demonstrating that they've met the objectives of that week's coursework.
That's fantastic. Great to know all that in advance, right? So you kind of know what you signed up for. So halfway through the course, you can't say, I didn't know what I signed up for.
and I want to jump in and just say that from the professor side, from the course development side, I've done a fair amount of that for all of our programs in the LLM. These courses are very carefully designed. This is not just what we sometimes see in the brick and mortar world, as I call it, where a professor has a syllabus that basically is a list of readings and here's a book and we'll talk about it, you know, for 90 minutes twice a week. That's not what this is. This is very carefully designed by subject matter experts in the field, and it's designed around very specific content and skill objectives for each week of study that are shared explicitly with the student, and assignments that are developed for discussion. It's not just, you know, talk about how you feel about employment at will. That's not what we do. You know, it may be scenario-based. It may be concept-based. To give you an example of one of the courses that I teach there, it's called Litigating and Investigating Employment Discrimination Law Claims. And in 7 weeks, we start from with a scenario that involves just one small business. We use it throughout the course. We start from an initial rumblings that there's going to be some sort of a lawsuit by some disgruntled employees through dealing with the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, dealing with their investigation process, the charge process, dealing with the beginning of the lawsuit, dealing with discovery in the lawsuit, dealing with motions, dispositive motions in the lawsuit, dealing with appeals and dealing with mediation, which is becoming more and more common. All of this arcs through the life of a course, just as a lawyer who's doing one of these cases for the first time would encounter. And that's really another nice thing about the program and the fact that it has been designed by experts. This degree in employment and labor law is particularly useful for lawyers who either have some of this as part of their practice, or they're in a job that is not necessarily practicing law, but it might be as a compliance officer or a human resources executive. It's also very useful for lawyers who want to expand their practice. And I think a lot of lawyers today here in the 21st century are looking for new areas to expand their practice that fit well with what they've done already. Sometimes it's striking out in a whole new direction based on demand. You know, if you're running a domestic relations practice, but half of your clients are coming in with employment problems, you might think about how you're going to shift this. And the LLM program allows someone to do that without abandoning their law practice, without having to relocate. Otherwise, if you didn't have one of these online programs, and there aren't very many of these online LLM programs, I might add, and not all of them were of the same quality. Otherwise, you would be forced to relocate. You know, say you got into an LLM program in Wisconsin. Okay, well, that you shut down your practice in Atlanta, and then you move to Wisconsin for a year or two, and you do this full time. There are not very many part-time LLM programs. And what we have designed here intentionally is an LLM program for working people who are using this right on the bottom line of their law practice.
I think that's what it comes down to nowadays.
Absolutely.
I mean, you have to, they're mixing work and play and live, and it's all
seamless.
There you go. Thank you.
I got a quick question. I know you want to get to Tiffany here as well, but on this, I don't know if this is a dumb question, it's already been asked or whatever, but obviously we're talking here in Atlanta, the John Marshall Law School of Atlanta, but if someone, you talk about all this mobility and people traveling, if they take some of these courses, do they apply in other states, or
The LLM degree
can be used in all 50 states?
Yeah, well, the LLM degree in employment law isn't a bar qualifying degree. It's not designed for that. It does provide an expertise, though, and it's useful to anybody within the 56 jurisdictions that comprise the United States, the 50 states plus territories and commonwealths.
But doesn't every state have different employment law? I mean, I'm just from a listener or civilian standpoint, right?
Absolutely.
I
mean, and you ask a great question.
So how do you adjust for all those variables?
Well, it's what you're doing, and this is why I love having students from a variety of states. Yeah. What you're doing is you're getting a good idea of the landscape that's out there, and you're acquiring the skills and the overview so that if you end up having a case in Peoria, Illinois, you know, okay, well, this is generally how employment discrimination law is structured, how employment laws are structured. Here are the kinds of laws I need to identify in this state. Right. I need to see if they exist there and what they say. It gives you the paradigm where you can do your work in any common law jurisdiction.
So it's the big picture and the foundation of all the basic principles you need to know. And then if you're in Kansas City, you need to know what the local impact is.
Right. You'll be able to know what questions. The most important thing about a lawyer that people don't understand before they come to law school is that a lawyer is not someone who makes arguments. A lawyer is somebody who asks the right questions. And it's learning what the right questions are to ask that separates the successful from the unsuccessful lawyer. And we are all about helping our students at all levels, whether it's in the Juris Doctor program, the LLM in employment law, or our American Legal Studies LLM program, to be asking the right questions.
Emily, I think these folks know what they're talking about.
I think so. That's why they're experts on this. For your prospective students, any attorney, how would they get in touch with you if you'd like to share?
They can get in touch with me at my emails, very direct way, which is just L Kaplan, KAPLAN, at johnmarshall.edu. And of course, my email and my phone number are kind of all over our website. And I'm happy to talk to people in person if they happen to be in the Atlanta area, but certainly most of our students are not. We are right now gearing up for our fall entry for our programs, whether it's the residential LLM in American Legal Studies or the employment law online. because these programs are for attorneys, you do not have to take the LSAT to be considered for acceptance, and we can turn things around fairly quickly. So if you're interested in getting started, please give me a call or an email, especially for the employment law. These are working attorneys. They tend to do things at the last minute, and we are happy to help turn around an application very, very quickly. It takes a little bit longer for an LLM and residential LLM and American Legal Studies applicant because they do have some documents from their law schools outside of the United States, but we can certainly help them in every way possible to get those applications done quickly as well.
Tell me the John Marshall Law School's Atlanta website.
Our website is www.johnmarshall.edu. And as I think you know, there is a law school in Chicago that is also a John Marshall Law School. We're not affiliated. So okay. We are Atlanta's John Marshall Law School, johnmarshall.edu. So if you not sure if you're on the right website, just scroll down to the bottom of the screen and look for that West Peachtree Street address.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being on. And we actually, for those of you just tuning in, we've been talking about Atlanta's John Marshall Law School, and we do have a graduate who got her JD at the from Atlanta's John Marshall Law School. It's Tiffany Simmons.
Yes, thank
welcome.
You.
Yes,
thank you for having me this morning.
And I will give you a quick bio for Tiffany. Award-winning, enthusiastic, and resolute on rejecting defeat, attorney Tiffany Simmons is the legal counsel of choice for those who seek the absolute very best representation. Attorney Simmons represents clients ranging from celebrities, businesses, to everyday citizens. She was honored to receive the 2013 and 2014 Client Distinction Award for being in the top 1% of her profession by Martindale Hubbell. She has been featured on many media outlets, including CNN's HLN After Dark, talk and radio shows. In addition to her media presence, Attorney Simmons is a published author, writing for the American Bar Association and other publications. She was also featured in the American Bar Association magazine and the Georgia Bar Young Lawyers newsletter. She does sit on the board of many organizations, including the Atlanta's John Marshall Law School Alumni Board, serving as secretary. In 2014, she was selected for the Georgia Bar YLD Leadership Academy. She is a member of the Georgia State Bar, American Bar Association, the Georgia Association of Black Women Attorneys, Georgia Association of Women Lawyers, Young Lawyers Division of State Bar, and Gates City Bar Association. Her philosophy of life encourages her to work hard, play hard, love hard, and trust God. I like that. Thank you again.
Thank you for having me this morning. I'm glad to be here.
You are definitely an expert.
Well, that's what they say. I work hard, in the profession to stay abreast of what's going on in the legal community as well as in our community so I can do the best that I can.
Now, the one thing that I said at the beginning of the show was, tell me if you're facing a DUI, some important tips.
Wow. Okay. Well,
I'm going to start off with the hard one.
Right. I have a lot of tips for those that are facing DUIs. For your audience, I do a lot of DUI work in the city of Atlanta, Fulton County. And what I say often is, if you are getting arrested for a DUI, please do not submit to any field sobriety test. Just allow them to arrest you. And we say that as criminal defense attorneys because the field sobriety tests are subjective. So that means whatever you're doing, if they feel, you know, your left hand turn or you know, your walking was a person that was intoxicated, that's what they'll put in their report. So it's not very objective. Mm. So I have clients, they come to me and they say, Attorney Simmons, I did the field sobriety, I passed. No, you don't know if you passed because they can put in that report you did not. That's the first thing I would say if you're getting arrested. Immediately after getting arrested and getting out of jail, hopefully, because some people, they can't bond out. But if you're able to bond out, that's when you need to hire an attorney. If you're not able to hire an attorney, you would need to do a request for your ALS hearing. Now, people get confused because the ALS hearing is totally separate from your criminal case that you're facing when you're facing a DUI. The ALS hearing stands for Administrative License Suspension. That is a whole nother agency that you would deal with. It relates to the Department of Driver Services. You would have a hearing with them. Mm-hmm. And then you would also have your criminal case. So, for example, if you were facing a DUI and on the criminal side, the DUI was reduced to maybe reckless driving. When you go to have your ALS hearing, that's what you can present to the ALS judge, and possibly that ALS suspension would be lifted as well. So it's kind of confusing, but I just definitely want people to know once you're arrested, you have 10 days to, you know, deal with the ALS side of that. Mm. So we recommend that you speak with an attorney as soon as possible.
As soon as you can.
Yes.
So tell me what part of your practice you have a vast variety of things that you do. What's your favorite part of your practice?
Well, Simmons Law, we specialize in business, criminal defense, and entertainment law. Sometimes people think those areas are not related, but they are related. There are a lot of times where I have entertainers who may face business issues as they build their brand. So that is where the business comes in. Or they may face criminal issues. Mm. For example, we're seeing Yes, we're seeing the DUIs as it relates to people that work in entertainment. Lately on the news, I've been seeing a lot of domestic violence issues as it relates to those that are in entertainment. So, you know, for the audience, entertainers are not exempt from dealing with real life issues. For me, I like all of the areas. All of them, they relate to my background. I've had a background in business, a background in entertainment as well. So, you know, I love everything.
Okay. And tell me, how is it being the lawyer for entertainers, as well as you being the talent on radio and TV?
I love it. like I said, I've been involved with radio and TV and even behind the scenes with production since I was a kid. So I definitely love it. And sometimes it is that balancing act of I have to serve my clients, but I'm also the client in certain situations. So, you know, I love it. And it's a definite way that you can connect with my entertainment clients because I know where they're coming from just as a talent and not just as they're, you know, looking at the legal side for them.
So tell me also, like, what would be the a difficult part about your job?
What's most difficult, I would think, is balancing it all. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's difficult, especially when you have your own private practice, to balance mm-hmm. that work and life. And sometimes that's difficult. Other than that, like I said, I love what I do. If I didn't, I wouldn't be here. Some days are more challenging than others. For example, you know, getting flying in at 12 a.m. and then being back up at 5 o'clock in the morning to start my day. If you didn't love it, you wouldn't do it.
Right. I agree with that balancing part for sure. Let me ask you this. For those people that are opening their own business, since you've done that, give me some legal tips.
All right. Well, opening your own business, it definitely takes time and setting a good foundation. Oftentimes, I run into small business owners, and really, that's where I come from. My family is a family of business owners back in Michigan. So I saw, you know, both sides of that legally and, you know, working the day to day of that. Mm-hmm. I definitely tell clients or potential clients, have your paperwork in order. If you want to be a sole proprietorship or an LLC, get that taken care of. Speak with a business attorney such as myself before problems happen. A lot of times they, you know, sign leases for buildings or leases for equipment, and something may happen, you know, after the lease is signed, and then they'll come to us. But having a business attorney ahead of time, it's a great idea. If you want to model your business, such as corporations, you know, like a McDonald's or, you know, something that is big, they have general counsel. So I oftentimes use that example to smaller businesses to let them know that there is a purpose for having, you know, general counsel before that problem occurs.
Gotcha. So how would somebody find, because, you know, you definitely need an attorney. when you get started with your own business. How would somebody look or find, you know, well, you for one, but any, what qualifications should they seek for a good business attorney?
Well, very good question, Emily. I actually do YouTube videos for clients, potential clients. And one of the videos we talked about consulting with an attorney, finding the right attorney for you. And in the case of, you know, if you're facing a criminal issue or even a business issue, first, you can ask the people around you. Ask your family or friends if they have any recommendations for an attorney. That's a good idea or a good place to start. Mm-hmm. From there, meet with that attorney. Some attorneys, they do offer free consultations just mm-hmm. depending on the type of case, and some of them don't. And there's nothing wrong with attorneys charging a fee for a consultation, because I tell people, you get what you pay for. Right. And there's nothing wrong with the free ones, but like I said, if you want to properly invest into your business or your legal issue, just, you know, pay attention to what you're paying for. Mm-hmm. From there, have a consultation, meet with them. Sometimes I know for my firm, when we talk with clients, we have to make sure they're a good fit for Simmons Law as well.
Sure.
So it's not, you know, some people make jokes about attorneys and private attorneys, you know, making money. You can make money in any field, and I appreciate the money that I make, but it's not always about the money. You have to make sure you're able to work well with that client, because it's nothing worse than having a client that the relationship turns adversarial and you're just mm-hmm. trying to do the best job you can for them.
It becomes stressful.
Yes, very stressful.
Now, are there other attorneys, types of attorneys that you refer business to?
Yes, definitely. The areas that I don't work in, or even the areas that I do work in, for example, with entertainment, I focus more on film and TV. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of colleagues where they do mostly music, and I refer cases or clients to them all the time. As it relates to family law, I have some clients that may have an issue that is, you know, a little bit more detailed than I would like to handle. I would refer those cases out. Okay. Cause I have clients, again, I've had an overseas client. He was a NBA player mm-hmm. and he had some family law issues, but I actually started off as his attorney handling some traffic matters. And when the family law issues arose, you know, I gave him the guidance I could, but I had eventually referred him to someone else.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you just handle your clients in every aspect, whether it be you or, you know, referring them to somebody that could do exactly what they need to be done.
Yes, that's definitely my goal, is to build a long-standing relationship with my clients. I want to be around when their grandkids are going away to college, etc. So that's my goal. I want to provide, you know, overall restoration to their situation. People sometimes, if you're not dealing with the legal system, you may not understand that it doesn't just go away. For example, I have cases that are from 2012 that I just got called into court this year. So imagine having that pending over your life for 2 or 3 years. And so, again, I try to work with my clients just to make sure they're whole all the way around.
That is awesome. So tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you.
Okay. Well, they can get in touch with me first at our website, which is www.simmonslawpractice.com. We also have a toll-free number, and that is 1-888-917-8387. We are on Twitter at I Am Simmons Law. We are on Instagram at Simmons Law, and as well as Facebook. And if you're in the Georgia or Atlanta area, I'm always out in the community doing various things, so you can catch me out in the community. And I also have something for you. When I come on radio, I bring gifts, and I brought you a Simmons Law water bottle.
Yay, I love water bottles. Thank you.
And Rich, I apologize. I don't have
one worries.
For you.
That's why we'll share whatever. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm very excited about the show, and I really appreciate everybody being here, and I look forward to having them on again in a future show.
I had a quick question, maybe one for the group as well, but first to Tiffany, is entertainment. That's kind of intriguing, a little bit different. And so with some of these entertainers, I guess you can't mention my name or whatever, but but just pretend like the microphones are off, whatever. Yeah. Who's the biggest entertainment? No, but seriously, I guess that's, you kind of, in the beginning of your conversation mentioned that, you know, they have these, they think they're above the law. And that kind of gets to their head, right? If you have that much money, that much fame, whatever, right? You just figure like you're untouchable, right? And so that's probably, is that one of your, I mean, what's your challenge, I guess, with working the entertainers is like getting the trust with them, or is it establishing the relationship, or telling them no for the first time? Most people don't ever tell them no. I mean, what do you see as your challenge with working with clients like that?
Well, it's a little bit of all what you said. Sometimes I get challenged being young, being a female attorney. Right. Yeah. That's something that I face, but I quickly overcome that when I, you know, talk about the things that I've done, or I talk about their legal situation and how I can help improve that. You deal with people that have attitudes sometimes, and sometimes they don't. You know, it varies.
Right.
But as for me, as I take it back to the type of clients that I prefer, I like to work with clients that I can work well with. So if it comes to a point where the person, they don't want to hear no.
Yeah, they're being antagonistic.
Right. I think at that point it would be best to sever ties. You know, you deal with egos in any area, especially in entertainment. But at the end of the day, you know, I think that with my background in entertainment, that's how I'm able to overcome some of those challenges of dealing in that industry.
Yeah. And if we, we got a couple of minutes, another question I had is for just collectively, John Marshall, for your students. I know you do a show, is it the second week of the month, or
the
for business professionals and their offering services?
Yes, I do.
So for like new students, what do y'all see as like on the short list or things that they, you know, are in need of as they receive their degree, I guess, as they start their practice?
That's a good question.
Well, I think the most important thing for a new lawyer, you're talking about what a new lawyer
might
need.
Yeah, a new lawyer. Now they got their degree and they're excited. They got their diploma. Now
what do I do next?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, work hard.
Right. Work hard is a very good piece of advice. Definitely don't go to Disney World.
Unless you're an entertainer.
You should go after you have gotten yourself on your feet, but don't celebrate before you've started your practice.
But I was thinking, like Emily often, she looks for once a month, she hosts a show. Right. Just for service providers, people providing those services to new attorneys. So what are some things?
Well, I think one thing that a new attorney needs very much is a good mentor. And the State Bar has a mentorship program that matches up new graduates to new attorneys. In terms of what I think maybe you're driving at is what kind of goods and services. I think it really depends on what your practice is and what your situation is. We are starting to see more and more attorneys set up virtual law practices, virtual law offices, which cuts down your overhead, but then opens you up to needing different kinds of services. So your presence is there online, and so that you have, let me give you, for example, one of the advantages of being an indie, as some people call it, independent attorney on a virtual law office is that you aren't supporting real estate all the time. You know, you're not sitting there paying rent on a space that may or may not be useful to you, but you will need to have conference room space to meet with clients. So, you know, I think the way that maybe the paradigm shift for new lawyers who are practicing in more of a virtual law practice is that vendors to them need to think about what does someone who doesn't have just one physical location for their business, what do they need? What can we do to support someone who may be doing a good deal of their own law practice work, either in a temporary offsite office or on their own home property?
Or like you said, virtually, so they don't need a landline, so they provide them with mobile access. And actually, you had on the show, what was it last week, Da Vinci.
Da Vinci Virtual Offices.
And they do virtual offices, is kind of what you're talking about.
It's global, and when we were talking about how the attorney has no borders.
Yeah.
Right. The Da Vinci.
Office without borders.
There you go.
Nice.
And just to add to that, I've experienced in my career so far, I've had office space, physical office space, as well as the virtual office setup. And I will say, at the end of the day, if you're doing a good job as an attorney, if you're building those relationships, a client doesn't care if you meet them at Starbucks or if you met them in your conference room at the virtual office space.
Yeah, I think you probably a blend, and like you were saying, is it if you are like make what a commercial real estate closing attorney, you have to have a physical office with it, right?
Sure. Or right. For, sure. Right.
But what types of
for
law?
For depositions.
Yeah, for depositions, things like that.
Well, whatever, even right? with that, you can still get conference space with yeah. virtual offices as well. Or sometimes mm-hmm. in the case of real estate, they work with other agencies or companies where they'll do the real estate closings at that company's office, et cetera. Yeah. So it's a wide variety or way that you can handle things as an attorney as it relates to your business. But to add to your question of new attorneys, I definitely want to hone in on the hard work. At one point, yeah. Simmons Law brought in some younger attorneys, and some of the things that I saw, you know, I definitely want to encourage them that the work starts once you pass the bar.
Right.
You, that's when
if you think that was tough, it's kind of like, well, I got my degree. Now I can play like an attorney on TV.
No,
whatever. Right?
And it's not like what you see on TV. Not
so,
at all.
So Lisa, what about like IT services or what other services do you think that a new attorney, you know, needs assistance or whatever, or
I'm a little bit stuck on this because, yeah. My biggest program, my employment law student, right. The average age is about my age.
Okay.
And Emily did give my law school graduation date, so you can work okay. that out for yourself.
Nice.
I will say one way to get those kinds of answers is in a program such as ours with a cohort, they call on each other
okay.
for questions. So sure. I know that even from state to state, a mentoring type supportive attorney gives another attorney an idea. So what I try to do if someone comes to me with a question like that is I think, well, who would know that answer?
Oh, yeah.
And so, I've got a lot of people to draw on.
So you kind of draw on those people, like for probably they need websites, right? And, you know, just the basic Absolutely. Business cards yeah. and all
well, and also like how to figure out what kind of technology do they need to communicate with clients
yeah.
and to communicate with courts, because courts have moved to electronic filing.
Really?
And very little paper actually is physically filed anymore in some court systems. Even within the state of Georgia, more and more courts are putting their court records up online, and mm-hmm. it's a little expensive. It's taken some time. In the metro counties, you find it's very common. The federal courts have almost all gone to electronic filing. So you have to figure out what kind of technology platform you need to keep your costs the lowest they can be, to give your clients the best value, and to do everything your clients need. And I really think that newer attorneys need to make sure that they are comfortable on video conferencing, because
yes.
that is
really?
The future. Yeah. We are even starting to see certain kinds of testimony being allowed and delivered in court through video conferencing, cutting down bringing a witness in from out of town and spending thousands of dollars on airfare and hotels. Instead, if you have an expert witness in Seattle, right. they can appear by video in some courts. Getting used to using that and figuring out how to integrate that platform between your tablet, your PC, your smartphone, all of these things need to be interlinked in a way that create a net that covers what back when I started law practice in 1987, was done physically.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking the other day about one of these things. We used to have in the law firm this thing called the suspense file. And the idea was that if you had something that needed to be done 6 months down the road and you didn't want to just rely on your old calendar, you would send it to this place in the law firm where it would go in a file, and human beings kept track of when the files needed to be pulled out again and brought to your desk. That was the suspense file.
Wow.
And today, that's absurd. Of course, we would do that as a reminder on a computerized calendar program, mm-hmm. no problem. It, not even one that would cost you any money. It's, you know, part of you know, even general Google Gmail. You can get the calendar function yeah. that will do that for you. So what you had 30 years ago that would require the physical space, the paper storage, and probably 3 to 4 employees to run, and the risk that they may forget things, which happily at Kilpatrick they never did. I can't say that was true at all firms. But, you know, now you don't need that space. You don't need those file cabinets. You don't have to employ people to do that. And it really lowers barriers to entry for young law school graduates. And I think, you know, we hear some complaining about from new law school graduates about, well, it's really hard to get into law now, and mm-hmm. law firms aren't hiring as much.
Yeah.
Well, law firms are changing their role in the legal system. I'm not going to say they're ready to be extinct, but certainly they're going to be smaller. They are going to be
more specialized.
More specialized.
Yeah.
But what that is doing is opening up opportunities for entrepreneurial individuals to be attorneys, start their own practice, and do what I think is the very most important thing, which I admire Tiffany very much for doing. I wish someone had told me 30 years ago to do this. Be your own boss. Don't work for others doing this legal work. Be your own boss. That is the ideal situation. And the technology now, and our younger law school grad, I would say younger in age, newer law school graduates, whatever age, been exposed to this technology. They should seize it, make it their own, and reinvent the practice of law. It's going on out there right outside this window this morning. It's going on everywhere. Mm-hmm. And the more it goes on, I think the more successful it will be in getting legal services to people who need them, because we have a very severe shortage of legal services in this country. We have, you know, way too many lawyers who were produced to work in big law firms, but we don't have lawyers for people.
And speaking of going on, we are just about out of time.
Sorry about that. Get me started.
I think we need to have a few of these folks back again. Whatever.
Absolutely. It was a great show. Thank you so much for listening to Atlanta Legal Experts. This show is sponsored by DaVinci Virtual Offices and DaVinci Meeting Rooms. If you are interested in part-time offices, meeting rooms, or need a professional business address for your business or for a second location in Atlanta or anywhere, you can find their links on our Atlanta Legal Experts website. That's ale.businessradiox.com, ale.businessradiox.com. Click the DaVinci logo for ALE listener specials and promotions. And don't forget to mention ALE Radio. It's Emily Rowell signing out.
See you next time.